Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing Podcast.
It struck a tree about 30 to 50 feet away from me. Imagine someone grabbed your hair and someone grabbed your feet and suddenly pulled the other way really abruptly. That was what my whole body did. Everything, every muscle convulsed. And then there was just the loudest noise. It was not even like, when you have like an explosion, your ears are ringing, that it, you know, it didn't even process that it was loud. It was just, my ears were just ringing and ringing and ringing. And then I was just shaking. And I, at first I thought it was just cold. It was super cold. I wasn't.
That was Grant Breidenbach taking us into what it felt like to get struck by lightning. This one is jam-packed with great stories and tips for your next trail adventure. Welcome to The Swing.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Quick and easy way to support this podcast is by clicking through our sponsors' websites. And right now, you can click through and check out Bear Vault, bearvault.com. We're going to dig into it today a little bit, some of the details that align with packing your bag. But if you head over right now to bearvault.com, you'll find out the best and safest way to protect your gear, to keep it away from critters, bears, and all sorts of other animals. Grant Breidenbach walks us through the gear and steps to going ultralight on your next hiking adventure. We find out how he's able to do a week-long backpacking adventure with a 12-pound backpack. Yes, that's 12 pounds, and this is amazing. We get into that today. We get into all the new gear and tips on packing the right food. Plus, we find out which is the number one resource you should be checking out to get a hold of some of this gear. We walk through a lot of it today, talk about some of the pads and everything else that goes in, but we talk about some resources as well. You're going to have no excuses to get out on the trail and get back into the backcountry after this one, so let's get rolling. Here we go, Grant Breidenbach from BearVault.com. How you doing, Grant?
Doing great. So glad to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for coming on here. This has been a lot of fun. We've got a few things that we've done in the past. I'll put some links out to that. You know, as far as Bear Vault, you're one of the leaders. In fact, we saw you out there. I think I let you know we were driving through the city, kind of a smaller town or whatever, and there was somebody that had a Bear Vault on top of their pack, and we drove by, we yelled out, "Hey, Bear Vault!" It was pretty sweet because they gave a big wave and everything. So you guys are, Bear Vault, I think for a lot of people already know about you, but I think today we're going to focus on maybe some of the people that, you know, aren't totally aware of what you offer. We'll put that in the links, and then we're going to dig in deeper today about getting people on the trail.
Yeah, I think there's really something for everybody in here today. You know, if you don't know about bear canisters, I think you'll learn something. And even if you might consider yourself a bit of a pro user, I think there's some tips and tricks that you'll be able to extract from our conversation today and really elevate your packing to the next level.
Perfect. I love that. I love that because I've done a lot of backpacking over my time, and I haven't done a lot recently, so I'm excited about this because there's a lot of different packs and sizes of packs and how to pack and write all this stuff. So we're gonna break it down to make it really simple today. So like we said, bearvault.com, if anybody wants to check this out, essentially you guys offer a really good solution if you're in like bear country or you have a lot of wild animals around you to protect your food, which, you know, if you've ever been out in bear country or even I guess now we did an episode recently. We had some people down in Florida, and they were talking about alligators. Have you guys ever has alligators ever come? Is that something that you guys are ever thinking about?
You know, you're not the first person that's mentioned that. You know, alligators, we haven't done a lot of research there, but the reality is surprisingly, Florida, a place with alligators, is bear habitat. We've had actually quite a bit of bear activity down in Florida, and had some canisters munched on down there. And
amazing.
And really, there's a thriving black bear population down in that state.
That is really cool. That just shows you how little that I knew, and probably a lot of people don't really realize that. So there you go. So bear, you guys are over there too. So, well, let's just start off from the top. I think today what we want to do is break down, how to pack a bag, how to be efficient. And let's take somebody that's maybe doing a two-day trip. They're heading out in the backcountry. You know, they've probably got some packable fly rods and some gear like that. They're going to be camping. So talk about that first. What's the first thing to think about if you're heading out for a multi-day trip and you want to get the stuff and pack efficiently? Where do you start, somebody?
Yeah, really start with two things. First, your pack. You probably already have your pack. And what you're going to want to do is figure out how your bear canister fits inside that. We've talked before, you go back in the episodes, it's really important, first and foremost, that you're carrying a bear canister. You're not always going to be there to defend your food, whether even if that's not bears, that could be, mice, rodents, that could be disease vectors or just, a lot of different animals out there that would love to have a bite of your food, and it's your responsibility to protect them. So you're going to want to figure out how that canister fits into your bag. Bags come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. You go back 10, 15 years, and our biggest size could probably fit horizontally in just about any backpacking bag. But, the fabrics and technologies have come a long ways, and bags are tending to get a little bit smaller now. Because a lot of gear, stoves are getting smaller, sleeping bags are packing smaller. So naturally, the bags are getting smaller. But canisters still have to be on the bigger side, A, because they need to fit your food, and B, they're a very specific size to fit the size of a bear's jaw so that a bear cannot crush it. And so really, it's important to fit the canister in there. And you might want to stop by your local outfitter and try 3-4 different sizes and see how they fit in. We have our largest size, the BV500, which if you're just going out for 2 days is probably overkill anyway, but it might not fit horizontally in the pack. You might want to step down to our next smallest size, the BV475. You can ultimately put just about any size vertically in a pack or strap it on top. Okay. But the most comfortable spot to have it that really balances your load in your pack is kind of right in the lumbar zone, horizontally placed. Because what we see often is folks will pack everything, right? They'll get the fly rod in the bag, they'll get the sleeping bag in there, tent, everything gets filled up. The bag's just about stuffed, right? Because it's the classic, if you buy a big bag, you're going to find a way to fill it. If you buy a small you'll learn how to make some sacrifices.
There's a law that it's about your time, right? If you give yourself, for some task, it's the same thing, right? You say, okay, I've got this deadline. If you give yourself a week, it'll take you a week. But if you give yourself 2 hours, you're going to do it in 2 hours. Same with packing, right?
You'll do it in 2 hours. There's something innate about human nature with the resources you have. And so what happens, though, is a lot of folks will kind of walk up to their bag with their canister and say, oh, shoot, this doesn't fit, after they've already packed. So it's really a good place to start. So you want to think about the length of trip, the pack you have, and ultimately, which I think we're going to kind of dive into, is what kind of cook are you? How do you like to eat out there? And that honestly has the biggest impact.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. So basically, you got your gear, you got your sleeping bag, your tent, that's the basic stuff. Let's just talk about the packing really quick, just for somebody who hasn't, and the thing we can add here is potentially, we're going to have to talk about adding a fly rod, which breaks down, a reel. There's some other little things, but that can just go in your little stuff sack and throw in there. But what's the first thing? Is the sleeping bag the thing that goes down at the bottom of your pack?
So when you think about packing a bag, a sleeping bag at the bottom is great because you don't want your heaviest weight too low in the pack. That can kind of pull you down, especially if you're navigating tougher terrain. But you also don't want it way high up either. If you have some of the heavier objects, naturally, all of your food is going to be probably the heaviest item in your bag, especially if you're out there for a few days. And if you put that way up above your shoulders, that's actually pretty unwieldy. If you're kind of climbing over a rock, scrambling down to the bank of a river, that could get you pretty off balance. So the key is kind of middle of your back and as close to your body as possible for the heavier objects. And the lighter something gets, the farther away you can get from your back. So your fly rod, right, this packed down, it weighs just about nothing. That can be, you know, all the way out, you know, maybe even dangling off the back of your pack. But the sleeping bag is light, right? It's fluffy. When it gets compressed, it's actually pretty heavy. So it's good to have that near the bottom. You know, it's kind of the item maybe second closest to your body, you know, and then maybe above that canister, you put your tent. You know, that nylon wraps up pretty tight, gets pretty heavy. You know, I love to pack clothing and socks and underwear and all those things kind of into the little nooks and crannies and kind of fill in kind of the empty space. And then I sort of work down into the smaller, lighter, or more fragile items as I kind of work out. But I kind of start right in like the lumbar of my back and work out from there.
Oh, so the lumbar, right. So you would start, so instead of just stuffing, you know, start down at the bottom and working your way up, you actually focus, like your food, for example, like the bear vault, which would have a lot of food in it, potentially all your food, that would go right against midway and kind of against your back. And then you could pack everything around that. Is that kind of how you would look at it?
Precisely. If I'm taking one of the bigger canisters, a bear vault 475 or bear vault 500, basically if I'm out there for 4 or 5 days or more, I'm going to put that right at kind of the small or the lumbar of the back. If I am going out for just one night and I'm taking a really small canister, I'm actually going to put that a little higher up my back. I'll probably put that just below my shoulders, kind of about midway up, kind of in the trapezoids type area. So that's where I would put a smaller canister.
Yeah, that's right. So you're trying to balance the pack so it's not too heavy at the bottom or at the top. It's kind of all in the middle. And then, so as you have that, how do you pack that? Because are these bags, I'm just thinking about how the bag is. Some of these bags, you actually stuff them almost, but do a lot of these bags allow you to, you know, put your canister in the middle and then pack from the bottom and the top, or how's that look?
It all depends on the bag. A lot of these newer kind of ultralight Dyneema packs that are really trying to shave ounces often employ a roll top closure, similar to like a dry bag. And there's only one way in and one way out. And then you also need to think strategically. It's another great reason to put your sleeping bag on the bottom, because you probably don't need that until the very end of the day, you know? Yeah. And then it gets tricky. Well, if you have to put your tent above your bear canister, you probably might need a snack before you need your tent. So, you know, just thinking about also the order of what you need to access more frequently versus less frequently, you can always take your snacks and your lunch for the day out of the canister and kind of put that in the hip belt pockets. And then if you need to step away from your pack, you can always tuck that back into the canister so that it's secure. But other packs, like one of my favorite backpacks personally is I have an Osprey Aether pack, which is a pretty fully functional pack. It's got a lot of bells and whistles.
Oh, and what's the name of that one? The Osprey?
Osprey Aether.
Oh, Aether.
Yeah. They might have changed the name over the last few years, but it's kind of their standard, really robust backpacking bag. And it's got all sorts of zippers. There's a separate zipper to access kind of that bottommost compartment. There's even a divider there. And then there's another zipper that kind of comes down and you can really open up the whole pack and reach into the side.
Nice.
So it all depends on kind of what your goals are and how many features you want on your pack.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay. So I love that you're throwing out some names so we can start to think about this. So the Osprey is a good brand for sure. So you're going to have your sleeping bag and you could pack it down to the bottom unless you have something, right? It wouldn't be the end of the world if you did that. But your tent's pretty heavy. So that you would want to maybe stuff above your sleeping bag and kind of next to the bear vault. How would that look?
Exactly. It all depends on your tent, right? So if you have, you know, if you're really trying to shave ounces and you've got, you know, something almost, you know, ultralight type bivy sack or 10, 20.
What do you use there, Grant? Do you go with like a bivy or do you actually have a nice big four season tent?
I have a tent that's actually what's called semi freestanding. I love to hike with trekking poles. And so what you do is you stake out the four corners of the tent and then you actually take your trekking poles and break them down a little bit. And they help extend the tent up. And then with the trekking poles, plus the tension from the different stakes, the tent actually pops up and has a ton of headroom, but the whole tent is under 2 pounds, which is incredible.
Damn. So how does that work when you get, I mean, would you be taking that out if you were potentially going into a big rainstorm sort of thing? Would that work okay?
You know, if I was in the snow in true four season conditions, it would be tough, but really I've had that tent in some gnarly hailstorms. A couple of years ago, I was in, Yosemite National Park during a period of some of the worst severe weather they had seen in years up there. It was, I think, one of the hailstorms hailed for 3 hours straight.
Damn.
And I was wow. literally using my shovel that I used to dig a cat hole for poop. I was using that to yep. shovel the hail away from the tent because it was piling up 6-8 inches deep around the tent. I actually, on that day, I actually was struck by lightning.
What?
And
you were personally?
Yes. Yes, I was. But the tent held up, you know, the tent persevered through that. Even a lightweight tent like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not the most confidence inspiring in high winds. And when the hail starts to pile up or the rain, you start to, you know, you're not quite as confident as you might be in some North Face expedition tent.
Yeah.
But it's persevered it through surprisingly challenging conditions.
It works. And so I don't want to leave the struck by lightning. So, so let's hear that. Like literally, cause a lot of people probably haven't been struck by lightning. What's that feel like?
Yeah, so I was indirectly struck. It was during a terrible thunderstorm. Basically, the hail was like quarter-sized hail. I was in the lightning position. It struck a tree about 30 to 50 feet away from me. Came through, who knows, through the ground, through the air, through the moisture. But basically, first kind of was the light. It was just like blindingly bright. You know, when you look at the sun and you kind of have like kind of like a spot in your eyes after it happened. Like I still had like just like kind of shapes and spots in my vision. But then like imagine someone grabbed your hair and someone grabbed your feet and suddenly pulled the other way really abruptly. That was what my whole body Jeez. Did. Everything, every muscle convulsed. And then there was just the loudest noise. It was not even like, when you have like an explosion, your ears are ringing that, it, you know, it didn't even process that it was loud. It was just, my ears were just ringing and ringing and ringing. And then I was just shaking. And I, at first I thought it was just cold. It was super right. cold. I wasn't dressed, for those kind of conditions, you know, being ankle deep in hail and the air temperature was dropping probably into the 40s. Yeah. And at first I thought I was just cold, but then I realized I truly couldn't feel my hands and I tried to make fists and they were just twitching. And it took about an hour or so to regain full motor control of my body.
Holy cow. That sounds like a close call from death potentially, right?
Yeah. I was really blessed to survive that encounter.
Holy cow. Wow. So, and you said, the lightning position, were you like in a position to like, what was that? Was that a thing you get in to avoid it?
Yeah. It's basically just crouch down. You keep your feet together so that theoretically, if there was current running through the ground, it wouldn't run through one foot into the other, or at least minimize that. You kind of put your feet together, you crouch down. And then you can put your hands over your, you can put your hands over your ears to protect, yourself from the kind of the loud sound. At that moment, I actually had my hands off my ears. And then if you have one of those foam style sleeping pads, also can sit or crouch on that, as that will help insulate you from the ground.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. That is a crazy story. And thanks for sharing that. A good tip there to remember, I guess. Yeah. I guess the lightning position didn't work for you, but it's a good thing to remember.
You know, and it's hard to know. It could have definitely prevented more serious injury. It's just hard to know.
Oh, sure. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. Well, and you mentioned the pad because, again, the gear stuff, right? You got all this stuff. The pad is interesting because, you know, back in the day when I did, actually, I still have the Therm-a-Rest, but I'm finding that some of the inflatable pads maybe aren't as effective. Do you like the foam pad? Is that the better way to go now?
I'm a bit of a side sleeper, and I would love to love one of those closed cell foam pads because they're light, they're indestructible. You know, when you're cooking dinner, you can throw it on a rock and hang out and sit on it, and you can't break the thing. But you know, when I sleep on my side, I just can't get a good night's sleep. So you know, while they don't offer the same durability, you know, these inflatable pads are getting so light and they're quick to blow up. Yeah. You know, so the leading market closed cell foam pads, are around 13 to 15 ounces. So just shy of a pound. And I have a really nice, what's called a Nemo Tensor Ultralight. It's an inflatable pad. It's about 3 inches thick. So even on my side, you know, don't touch the ground. It's insulated to a comparable R value of insulation. And it's only 16, 17 ounces. So less than a quarter of a pound heavier.
Wow. Yeah, that's it. And I used one on a trip. We were up in Alaska, and the outfitter had, I think, something similar, and they were really sweet. They were totally lightweight. And I remember I grabbed them. I was like, wow, this thing packs up into about the size of a, you know, like a I don't know, like a cantaloupe, even smaller than a cantaloupe.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is tiny. Because they, back in the day, I mean, the old Thermarest, and I'm sure Thermarest has their own style now, but you know, we still have those old pads we use on our boat trips, and they're gigantic.
Oh, right? My goodness. You know, you hang it off the bottom of your pack, and it's
exactly.
It's like a big, huge, like, sleeping roll. I know the one that I have is, you know, probably about the size of a, like a 16 ounce, like a half liter Nalgene.
Man,
you know, it's tiny, and it weighs nothing.
You know what I love about this too, for me, is that we've been talking about this for a while with the kids, right? We got these kids and they're getting older. They're 8 and 10. And we've been talking about for a few years, like, God, we got to do some backpacking trips.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And we just haven't done it. We do a lot, tons of hiking. We're out there all the time hiking, but we just haven't done the overnight stuff just because partly the gear thing. But I think given that stuff's new, I think we need to take a tour of the store, right? Out, you know, just hit an outdoor store and be like, okay, let's get the bait. Because it sounds like the kids can carry their own stuff pretty easy.
For sure. No, with the improvements in weight savings on this gear, you know, you can get a kid's pack down to really not that much more than a day pack.
Oh,
and you know, the kids are not miserable, they're not crying, they're actually having a positive time and a great
this
experience.
Is so cool.
And we're really encouraged by that. And the other end of it too, the same goes actually for older folks. We're really seeing the advancements in gear are giving people that are getting older that, you know, they might not have the mobility or the endurance that they used to, but, you know, they're able to get lighter gear that just takes so much load off of an aging back.
Mm.
And people are getting out and going to places that they didn't think they would be able to reach at the age they're at.
That's a great point. What do you recommend? Is it just go to the, you know, if you got an REI or whatever outdoor store, just go there. Is that the better thing to do and just dig into their stuff? Or do you think you can go online and be like, hey, I need this stuff. You can just get it all there.
I think it all depends on your style. There's so many great blogs out there these days that go into the nitty gritty of every piece of gear and, you know, will side by side compare it and stress test it.
Yep.
But there's something too about going into, you know, a store like an REI and feeling it. But above all, my favorite, and not every city or town has this, but like, for instance, I live in Boulder, Colorado, and we have a recycled gear store where people go and they consign their gear. You know, they often have really nice gear, but they want, you know, the Ferrari of backpacks. You know, they had the Porsche of backpacks, but now they want the Ferrari. And you know, you get it, you know, lightly used for 60% off of what it originally cost. And it's amazing, you know, the quality of gear you can get. And really, you know, really recycling that gear, not having unnecessary gear manufactured or winding up in the landfill.
Oh, right. Yeah, I love it. Well, let's take it to, again, so we've talked about some gear, you know, we're not going to cover everything today on all of the gear and stuff and packing, but just tell us, like, a resource. You mentioned, is there a blog or something comes to mind where if somebody wanted to really dig in and find out what is the ultralight stuff or just the gear they can get if they need to get it all, where would you send them?
Absolutely. My personal favorite is there's a website called Outdoor Gear Lab.
Oh, yeah.
And they definitely emphasize, you know, some fancier gear. But I think they take, honestly, a pretty almost scientific approach and kind of put gear head-to-head and rank it on a variety of, you know, important factors. And it's a way that I've selected some of my favorite gear.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. And I think they do. You could probably go in there and talk, you know, ultralight, whatever. Right. And they'll give you the lightest and all that stuff. So that's a
great
resource. Okay. Okay. So let's get back to the pack. So we got our bag. Let's just imagine we got this Osprey pack and it's big enough that, you know, we can do a big multi-day trip, but say we're still in that two-night range. So what was the Bear Vault you would recommend for that? Is the 500 the one, or would you go a little smaller?
So really the key is when I think about choosing a canister, it depends on the number of people I'm backpacking with and how I like to cook. So if I'm going out with a buddy for two nights, we could either share perhaps a Bear Vault BV450 or a Bear Vault 475.
Right.
But yeah. Also, you know, I like sometimes to keep my snacks mine. I don't want people snacking on my beef jerky.
Right.
So
no.
I might take my own canister, and our smallest size, the BV 425 sprint is great for 1 to 2 nights. I've even squeezed 3 in there when I was really, really intentional about the packing of it. And so the other thing too is, you know, how do you like to cook? So I am really serious about saving as much weight as I can and getting like the most bang for my buck, the most calories out of that space. And so I often can bring a smaller canister. However, some people love to be the backcountry chef. You know, you can't believe it. They've hiked 10 miles in, they open up and they've got like a fresh bell pepper. You're like, where'd that come from? Wow. And then, you know, they pull out an avocado and somehow it's not like brown and like smashed. And you're like, how did you pull that off? And nice. So, you know, some people love to like cook and cook elaborately in the backcountry. And so if you're doing that, you know, you're probably going to need a bigger canister.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. So if you're doing the, like, I mean, my experience is like, okay, I've got the freeze dried meals, you know, which I always loved, you know, for dinner, I've got what, even breakfast maybe. And then, so that's lightweight stuff. And on those freeze dried meals, now, are you sticking those in the bear canister as well? Does that all go there?
My secret tip on the freeze dried meals is the packaging they use is actually pretty thick. It's pretty stout. Because I guess because it needs to be good until 2045 or whenever they expire. But it actually, when you roll them up, that packaging actually takes up quite a bit of space, quite a bit of air volume. So what I do is I actually take like a Ziploc freezer bag, and I will, before my trip, I will open up on the day before the trip or whatever, I'll open up the Mountain House or Backpacker's Pantry or whatever that freeze-dried food is, and I'll pour it into a Ziploc bag and I'll suck all the air out, and it packs down to about half the size. And you get a huge savings of weight, and the bags that are rated to freezer quality, make sure you get one that does not have BPA in it, but they actually not only freezing temperatures, but they can also handle boiling temperatures. So I'll actually cook my Mountain House food directly in the freezer bag, and then I'm not having to clean out a pot or anything like that.
So you'll cook it in, you'll pour the hot water into like the Ziploc bag.
Directly into a Ziploc bag, yep.
A heavy duty one, right? Oh, that's not BPA.
Yep, and even in cold weather, it doesn't cool off super fast or anything. It's not your food's going to be cold. It's not bad at all.
That's good to know, yeah, because you think the packages, they come in, they say you put them in there and they keep them, you know, leave them in there for 10 minutes, right? And they stay warm. But you're saying a Ziploc is just as good.
Exactly. And I've always believed they even at high altitude, they cook a lot faster than the companies say they do.
Yeah, they do.
That's always been my perception.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, you don't have to wait 10 minutes. If you're hungry, dig into that. I'm always digging it early.
Especially if you like it a little crunchy, you know? Really dig right in.
I love it. Okay, and then you got all your other gear, like you said. I mean, my luxury food was always, I'd bring a little bit of cheesehead, right, for the first day or whatever.
Like so a little Romano or... good stuff.
Exactly. A little cheese. And then obviously the beef jerky. If it wasn't like, you know, like $50 a pound, I'd bring more. That's
always you got to protect it, you know?
I know. Okay, good. So then what else? Let's just take it back to the pack. And we're going to take it out here. Glad we're talking about food, because we're going to dig back into food before we get out. But just on the packing of the bag. So we've talked about a lot of the stuff. There's a lot of little things that go along with this, you know, the first aid kit and everything else. But talk about anything we missed on packing. Do we just remember that we pack the heavy stuff against our back in the middle, everything else goes around it? Or do you want to give us any more tips on how you actually pack that bag?
I think that's a really good place to start. And then I think the next thing is there's sort of a graph, a continuum between like efficiency and comfort, right? And it's really, what are your goals? You know, if you want to hike 2, 3, 4 miles into the backcountry and really like set up your base camp, you know, and you've got, you know, you're running your own little mini outfitter fishing camp back there, basically. Yep. That's great. And that, if that's what you want to do, that's awesome. And you can bring, you know, they've got these crazy lightweight chairs, they've got hammocks. Amazing the luxuries you can bring back there, right? But also, if you want to go 20 miles in a single day back to that spot that nobody else is fishing, I mean, those fish are so unpressured, then, you know, you have to really get serious about the gear, and you'd have to make some sacrifices. You know, I've started bringing a lot less clothing than I used to, or, you know, you might not be able to bring that float tube, you know, or, you know, you might start to look at getting a down quilt instead of a synthetic sleeping bag, right? There's lot of things you can do that it might only be 5-6 ounces per item, but suddenly you've shaved 5-6 ounces off of, off of a lot of items. And it's amazing how light your pack can be. So my pack consistently, Dave, when I go out on average, my usual backpacking trip is about 3-4 days. And before I add in the weight of food and water, my pack, including the bear canister, is right around 12 pounds.
Wow.
And that's for That's for solo travel.
Damn. 12 pounds. That seems unbelievable. But the great thing about that is that's exactly what I want to give my kids.
Exactly. Yeah. And theirs could be even lighter because they don't need an adult size sleeping bag. Their down jacket is smaller, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
This is really cool. Yeah. And we got all the gear, of course, the clothing, and we're not going to dig into everything, but there's a bunch of reasons. And I think the Outdoor Gear Lab is a great one, and the trekking poles, and there's all sorts of cool things. So this is just like a step to get people thinking. Like, I love the way you said too, if you're older, this is a great opportunity. Like, maybe people think like, man, I can't carry a heavy pack. Well, 12 pounds. I mean, I think most people could carry a 12 or even a 20 pound pack, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
This is good. And then the Bear Vault itself is a very heavy duty, item, but it's not super heavy, like heavy weight wise, right? What is the Bear Vault? What does that thing weigh empty?
Yeah. So it depends on the size. But basically our smallest size is just a little bit under 2 pounds, and our biggest size is just a bit under 3 pounds to give you some context there. We've refined it over the years. We've continued to work on the design and basically we've gotten this thing as thin, as light as absolutely possible while still, keeping strong, keeping the bears out, because we recognize it. You don't want to carry extra weight.
Yeah.
So we've milled off every possible ounce. And I mean, not even ounce, we've gotten down to the gram many times. And we are very specific about how many grams the product is and how to make it as efficient as possible for our users.
That's really cool. I just want to go down the gear just really quick again. So because you have this 12-pound pack without food or water, what are your – can you just give us a rundown and maybe talk – because you talked about some, like the ultralight pad, right, the company, and you talked about your tent, which is another great I'm sure there's a bunch of – what else is in your pack that's rounding out the 12 pounds?
So really the four – biggest things that you can think about. You can really think about it as your big four. That is your sleeping bag, your tent, your backpack, and your sleeping pad. Okay.
Yeah.
And those are the areas where you can have the biggest weight savings.
Oh, cool.
Everything beyond that is going to be kind of a couple ounces here, a couple ounces there. And it's really more about the items you're not bringing than the quality of the items you are bringing. For sleeping bag, I carry actually an REI sleeping bag. It's got really high quality down, comes in just a little bit under 2 pounds, and it's rated to 15 degrees. Sleeping pad, we were talking about that earlier, and I use a Nemo Tensor insulated inflatable pad. Tent, I use that semi-freestanding tent. There's quite a few on the market. That model, and it comes in just a little bit under 2 pounds. And lastly, I use a Dyneema pack with a roll top style, 45 liters, and that comes in just a little bit under 2 pounds also. I have a couple pack styles that I love. One of my favorites is ULA packs. They're made in Utah, handmade with just really quality Dyneema and ultralight materials. And then really everything beyond that is pretty optional as long as you're being responsible. There's kind of, I have this idea of what it is to be responsible ultralight, because you don't want to pare down your gear so much that the thunderstorm comes up or that fall snowstorm comes along and you're the guy that gets pulled out of there by search and rescue because you didn't plan, you know?
Or you're freezing or you can't even sleep at night because you're so cold.
Exactly. And it's just, it's not a fun experience, right? Like, I mean, I love some good type 2 fun, but we all know that it has to be enjoyable at some level. So, I'm always bringing a down jacket. I'm bringing really lightweight rain gear, both pants and rain jacket. But perhaps most importantly, I'm also bringing a satellite communicator. I think that's a really great tool that we have the option to use in this day and age. And they're light. There's no reason not to use it. And then I think ultimately a bear canister has really become a huge part of what it means to be responsible ultralight. You know, I am in the backcountry. I have a duty to respect this place that I am a part of. It's a duty to respect the wildlife there. And a bear canister is really just the best way to do that. So that's kind of the other key piece of being responsible ultralight.
Do you take your stuff out? So when you have your food scraps, you probably don't have much, but do you just put it back in the bear canister if you have any?
Absolutely. Yeah. First and foremost, try to eat everything. And you know, planning meals out so that you can eat it out all. And then, you know, any trash, any food scraps, goes back in the canister. If there's a lot of like liquid, like let's say you have, you've made pasta. I love to make pesto pasta when I'm backpacking and you get the water, that basically was in the pasta that you used to boil it in. So what I do is I strain that out, and then there's a technique called broadcasting it. That's a fancy name for you spray it as wide as you can and spread it out. I mean, don't do it on the trail. Don't do it right next to a body of water. Don't do it right next to your tent, but just spread it out and it's fine. But if there's actually food chunks in it, you want to pack that out.
Yeah. Pack that out. That's it. Gotcha. Okay. So good. So you're literally, you're down to like right there, those items and your pad. What does that thing weigh? Like less than a pound?
Yeah. Right around a pound.
A pound. Yeah. So basically you got, you know, 2, 4, 6, 7, and then plus, you know, the canister, that's 8, 9. So you're like kind of 9 pounds with the big items.
Exactly.
And everything else, you got 3 more pounds of just your missile. I mean, really, your clothes, you must have some pretty lightweight clothes too, if you're keeping
absolutely them. My rain pants, my rain jacket total about 8 ounces. My down jackets, right about 6 ounces. So it starts to add up slower on those items.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. And then, like we said, just packing it, you get all that stuff. Now you know what your heavy stuff is and pack that either around, like we said, next to your back, in the middle, and then spread it out lighter from there. Well, let's take it out. The food and food choice and caloric intake, right? That's a big part of this, because if you're smart about it, you know, you could get a bunch of crap and have to carry a lot of food, or you could probably get the right food where you don't have to eat as much. Let's talk about that. I think that's where you're going with this, right?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the biggest places that people can improve on their packing. And you really don't have to spend very much money. You're going to buy food no matter what. You know, whereas a new sleeping bag, you know, cost top of the line sleeping bag could run you $600, right? But food, anybody can tackle this. So, you know, I thought I was bringing good food when I first started backpacking. I thought tuna packets were awesome.
Right.
You know, they pack so tightly, you know, there's like no extra airspace. You can line those puppies up, you know. But then I really learned about this concept of caloric and volumetric density, right? So volumetric density, that's how we normally think of density, right? You know, lead is more dense than styrofoam, right? In the same amount of area, you're getting more weight packed in there, right? So if you're bringing hot flaming Cheetos that are full of airspace, those have really poor volumetric density, right? Whereas if you're packing tuna packets, right? Tuna packets have great volumetric density. They're super dense and packable, right? But the other idea of it is caloric density, and that is the measure of calories per ounce, right? So the Cheetos actually might be pretty calorically dense, right? Because they weigh nothing, right? But because they got all those good processed foods, they might be 300-400 calories, you know, for only an ounce or two.
All right.
But the key is finding foods. There's a small selection of foods that are both calorically dense and volumetrically dense. And it might surprise you. So tuna, right? That's really volumetrically dense. Actually, if you look at the back, it has very few calories. You're not getting very much nutrition. Your best packet of tuna is probably 70, 80 calories. That's like half the calories in a Clif Bar, for instance. And it's heavy. There's a ton of water in there, right? The more water you have in your food, there's no calories in water. That's excess weight. So you have to figure out foods that don't have water and really have an emphasis on fat. You know, the great thing is when you're backpacking, you're actually a metabolism that burns fat really well. You're getting exercise. Don't stress the fat too much. I'm forgetting the exact numbers, but basically fat has, as you know, upwards of 3 times the calories per gram of weight. So for instance, like the king of them all, when I go backpacking, I actually take a small little container of olive oil. Okay. And when I have like a Mountain House type or other freeze dried or dehydrated meal, I'll usually pour an ounce or so of olive oil on it. And that is 240 calories in every ounce.
Oh, wow.
It's one of the most calorically dense foods you'll find.
Perfect. And I love
because
olive oil.
It's a liquid, it's volumetrically dense, right? It takes up almost no space in your pack. But generally, your freeze-dried foods are going to be advantageous. You can even purchase grains that would normally have to be cooked but are actually dehydrated. So that way you use less fuel to cook it. So you can find like quinoa grains that have been cooked, right, rehydrated, and then dehydrated again. So all you have to do is just heat them back up and put a little bit of water in, but you get huge weight savings.
This is awesome.
So the key is finding things that are both calorically dense and volumetrically dense. I was packing for a 250-mile backpacking trip a couple years ago, and I was having to get really serious about my packing and figuring out how I was going to fit it all in the bear canister. And through really making wise food choices, not only was I able to fit it all in, but I estimate that for each 7-day period, I was able to save about 5 pounds in food. And so, you know, we're talking about cutting ounces or grams with, you know, break your toothbrush in half. You know, I'll be the first to admit my toothbrush is broken in half, but you know, that's half an ounce, right? That's nothing. But when you talk about saving 5 pounds of food, but giving the same amount of calories, that's a game changer.
Yeah, that's a huge tip. I love the olive oil tip because that's something I love. Where would somebody go on this end if they want to really figure out what foods are the best to bring? Is there a resource out there you know of?
If you want to really get into the weeds about it, if you're serious about this and you want to like really take some time and digest what this means, there's actually a YouTube series out there called The Gear Skeptic. Just look it up on YouTube. This guy has a spreadsheet with about 1,000 lines, and he's listed out almost every conceivable food in there that you could imagine backpacking with. And he has the weight, the volume, the calories, the fats, the proteins, all the numbers. And you can really build out a menu for yourself within that and come out with foods. You know, if you think about bringing beef jerky, not all beef jerky is created equally. There's some beef jerky that's more calorically dense than other beef jerky. So you really can make some wise choices and save a lot of stress on your back.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, the Gear Skeptic. I'll put a link in the show notes to that as well. And the other stuff we talked about today. This is good. I think we have a good, rounding this out, you know, just on getting light, because the cool thing about getting light here is that the lighter you are with everything we're talking about, that means that you're not as bad carrying a fly rod or even, you know, an extra reel or something like that. That's the
Absolutely.
Cool thing is that it allows you to. So my pack, I remember back in the day when I used to do more of it, you know, my pack, I don't even know what it weighed, right? It was probably 50 pounds, you know, and then of course the float tube, but you don't really, that's the cool thing about, especially if you're fishing lakes, you don't have to have a float tube, right? You can actually fish off the bank a lot of times and the stuff is so light, the rod, the flies, it is pretty doable.
Totally.
So this makes it, I mean, I think you could do, I mean, maybe not 250 miles, that's pretty epic, but you know, you could do a multi-day trip for sure, like a week and just bust it out with your fly gear these days. So
absolutely. And even if you have a float tube, you know, if you get serious about reducing your weight, it's not so bad to bring that float tube. You know, I grew up in Idaho with, you know, there's this range called the Sawtooth Range there that's got just, you know, these amazing rugged alpine lakes. And a lot of them have these just gnarly trails or no trail at all to get up to these lakes where there's just, you know, just phenomenal brook trout or even some bigger fish. And, you know, and it would be pretty unfeasible to get up to those lakes with a heavy pack and a float tube unless you really got serious about your pack weight.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I was just going to give a shout out to, we did an episode quite a while back on, this was with Phil Hayes, Ultralight Boats, and he broke down his float tube. There are some tubes out there that are super light too, so it is, even in that phase, you know, there's a guy, and he's a specialty, so we'll have a link to that one so people can check out as well.
For sure.
Nice, Grant. Well, I this has been awesome. I think we've given everybody a good taste of, you know, how not only the gear, but how to be ultralight and get out there. So, you know, I think there's no excuses now, right? Whether you're a kid, you got a six-year-old kid, or whether you're, you know, older person, I think everybody can do it these days. Seems like it.
Exactly. And you can do it while being responsible and ultimately protecting the wildlife around you too with a bear canister.
Perfect. That's right. Well, we'll send everybody out to bearvault.com. to check that out, because obviously, you know, that, you know, for sure in those places where there's lots of bears, that's just a requirement, but there's a lot of other areas where you might need it, like you said, critters and, you know, all sorts of mice. I mean, whatever, you know, you hate to wake up in the morning and all of a sudden, geez, you know, some mice got into your stuff and ate your ate your dinners for the week. That would be a good situation.
Yep, absolutely.
So, okay. All right, Grant. Well, thanks again for the time, and we'll definitely keep in touch with you here moving forward. And yeah, thanks for all the knowledge.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the podcast, Dave.
So there it is. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/backpack right now, and you can check out all the show notes for this episode and get all those links. We'll have a couple of videos over there as well, showing you, digging in a little bit deeper into what we talked about today. This is a great time to give a shout out to an upcoming series we have going, which is falls in line, similarly to a lot of the outdoor stuff we have going. This is The Road Less Traveled, and we're going to be digging in to a bunch of the names, faces, and brands around eastern Idaho, and a focus on hiking, fishing, traveling, and just all the people out there in that region. So this is traveled, so get ready for that. It's going to be coming up soon, The Road Less Traveled, and we're going to be excited to dig into some of those people. We've talked to a bunch of people already. In and around the area, obviously, it's a hot spot. We're going to do a deep dive and provide some opportunities to learn more about this part of the country. If you're heading into the backcountry right now, grab your bear vault. That's the best opportunity to get what you need to protect your provisions from bears and other critters while out in the woods. We've talked about this before, so if you need something, if you ever had that, or if you're going into a national park, anything, the bear vault is what you need to get started. All right, we're going to head out of here. This was a great little bonus episode we tossed in here, so I'm excited to do more of these. I'm definitely going to get the kids out, as we talked about today. Getting the kids out on the trail is going to be huge, and we're going to get some backpacking, some multi-day backpacking in. So time to hit the gear shop, time to look up that outdoor store, and I'm not sure where we're going to start, but that's where I'm heading this week. I'm going to make a note. Might be REI, maybe one of the other outdoor stores, but we're going to check into it. I already have the pad I know in mind. We were out with Fishhound Expeditions. They had some lightweight pads that we were using that were super awesome, and I think that's the style we're looking for. Sleeping bags, tents. I like how Grant went into on this one. He was talking about the trekking poles. What a sweet idea, right? Trekking poles. I mean, if you're summer camping, or even maybe some a little bit heavier duty stuff, the trekking poles with one of those lightweight shelters, that's huge. And then the food, of course. You know, it just seems like we're building everything we have around our sponsors. Range meal bars pack 700 calories into one of their bars. I mean, you could literally take, on a three-day trip, take three of those bars. I mean, that's like three meals right there. So that's kind of what I'm going towards. And of course, the olive oil trick. I love the olive oil trick. That was another good one by Grant, getting some bonus calories there. So it's all coming together. And as we move ahead into the new year here soon, we're going to be digging into more of this and helping everybody, whether you're getting out fishing or hunting, whatever you're doing out there, getting on the trail, we're going to be providing the resources to get you started. All right, well, I'm going to get out of here. I hope to catch you maybe on the trail or maybe on the water anytime. You can connect with me, Dave, at wetflyswing.com, or on social media, wetflyswing. If you want to connect, or if you have an episode idea to connect with me, let me know. That'd be great. And I am heading out. It is getting, it's not super late yet in the evening, but it's going to be getting late. So I hope if it is evening, you're having a good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you are in the world.
and I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.